Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, UNIFYD, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
What's up, everybody, and welcome in to the Backliners Podcast. You're right, Barra. My mic is quiet for some reason, and I don't know why. So I'm just going to turn it up real loud, and if it's bad, it's bad, because what else can we do about it? It's a podcast. It's me. It's Agro and Barra. What is happening in any of our lives? Who knows? Not me. But
look,
we're here.
It's the off-season, man. Like, it's
it
not
is,
serious.
Dude, it is off-season brain to the max. For me, I don't know about you, but I just can't think of anything. I have to like yell for it to pick it up. All right, I'm just gonna be yelling the whole episode. Didn't bring water, unlucky for me. But that's the Joe's gonna be trying to go to sleep, and she's gonna be pissed, dude. One of the reasons that I was running like 30 seconds late, okay?
That turned you down on Discord because you're just yelling.
Well, I have to yell. One of the reasons I'm like 30 seconds late is that this football game, the Cowboys game, was going absolutely insane at the very end. And Barra, I know you're not a football fan, but
nope.
Imagine this, okay?
Okay.
Imagine that, trying to put this in the best smite analogy I can. Basically what happened is the Cowboys are trying to score. They have no timeouts. They have to run up and they have to spike the ball, which is, just means like snap it and throw it straight into ground in order to stop the clock. But the ref needs to touch the ball before they can snap it. And the ref runs into the quarterback and that loses them like 2 seconds and the game clock expires and the game is over because he couldn't touch it because he ran into the quarterback. So like, what if you guys were about to secure EFG and Vinny just like tripped and like landed on Ven's keyboard and like made it so he couldn't secure the fire. So they stole EFG and they won the game off of it. That's what happened. I would be very tilted. Cause you can't like replay it. Right. That's just like how it goes. I don't know.
You really can't do anything about that. Like the ref just trolling or?
The ref just trolled. That's just how it goes. They just,
wait, you actually can't do anything. You're just gamazed.
Their season's over.
Oh,
yep, it's there's no, and in just like all good tournaments, Barra, there's no loser's bracket, you know? It's one and done. The stakes are there in front of you.
If there was a loser's bracket, the ref play wouldn't have mattered. I'm
right,
just
which is why it would suck, Barra. You made my argument for me. What? That's why it matters. That's why it's exciting.
No, if Vinny trips and trolls on our keyboard, I'm hoping there's a double even bracket to save me, bro.
Nope, that's the way it goes, bro. That's what makes it exciting. Absolutely crazy. Everyone's saying it was on the quarterback. Whatever happened, whoever's fault it is, that is a wild, wild way to have your season be over for sure.
That's kind of funny though.
Absolutely wild.
I just tried to drink my kombucha with the lid on. So off season going great.
Yeah, no, that's the way it goes. Okay. I'm riled up, Barra. I'm riled up. My mic isn't working the way it should. And now look, Mabino is normally my boy in the chat, but I will defend this to my last breath, okay? Idiot level take after this world's aggro.
Oh, no. Oh, that's
Are you kidding me? Really? What are you talking about? Double Elim and MOBAs doesn't work. It doesn't work. That's why no one does it at Worlds. What are you talking about? That's why no one does it. You do double elim up until the final bracket, and then it's single elim because that's what matters. That's what makes it exciting. That's what makes it cool. Come on. Chat, if you told me that you loved PK's run last year, but you think there should be double elim, I think you're dumb. I think you're dumb. I'm serious. I don't think you get it, okay? If you play last year's Worlds 10 times, Ghost wins 9, right? They win 9. They were the best team by a mile going into that Worlds. What makes it cool and interesting is that it isn't the best team that always wins. It's whoever plays the best on that weekend. That's why they play it. So if you like those cool runs by underdog teams, you best be loving the single elim. Because that's your only option.
Well, that's incorrect, Agro.
Why do you think that, Bear?
Because that run could literally happen in lose bracket.
But it's so... But like, bro, you are rolling the dice.
I win. It is I win. So... I win.
It is so low. What do you mean?
I beat your argument.
What are you talking about, Barra? If you want to have the most unique winners possible, Barra, if you want the most unique winners possible, then it should be single elit, right?
I don't know. I'm not going to listen to what you're saying, Barra. You're just so riled up.
Barra, chat, here's the thing about Barra, okay? He riled me up many years ago by saying that all Disney movies are bad. This was early in the podcast life. It's actually crazy that I kept doing it, all right? And then I go, I can't believe you said that. I turn the podcast off. I go, I can't believe you said that. And Barra goes, yeah, I was just trolling. I don't actually think that. I was just saying it because I thought it was a good bit, okay? And I have lived with that truth for a long time. And I'm sick of it, okay? And Bear is doing the same thing to me now that he did then, and I'm not letting him get away with it. Double elim is fine to qualify. Once you get there, it is single elim because you can't give a big enough advantage to the winner and retain the hype. I'm right. Deal with it. I'm not entertaining any argument on this. I won't. I'm one.
Well, I think you just did.
I'm not entertaining it because I'm not. I'm not even giving it any thought. Okay. I have solidified my thought process, and I'm very.
I thought you already did.
I know.
You already, based off how angry you got,
it makes me so mad, dude. Because everyone's just circle jerking about how this world wasn't as good because it wasn't double elim, and I'm like, what?
No, It wasn't that. It was more of just all of the games were stompy one way or the other.
Okay.
And there wasn't, like, great games. I mean, don't get me wrong. It was what I had to see, like, Leviathans win? Leviathan? I don't know why that just sounds so, like, wrong. I don't know why. Leviathans won. It was just, like, the lackluster games. Topped off with, like, no crowd. I think it just made Worlds overall kind of boring.
Well, you hit it right there, Barra, and that's that this Worlds could never be what anyone wanted it to be, because last year, at least, we had spent all year online, and then we came in studio to do Worlds, and so it at least felt different in that way. This year, because of the pandemic, we could not have done anything to make it feel different than what it normally was.
Oh, no.
I'm not blaming you for that. I'm just saying that I think that people are misinterpreting their what made them feel like this was less fulfilling, and that what it is that's that it had, we couldn't change anything functionally from what it was all year to the World Championship.
No, I'm not saying it was anything on you guys, like on High Res End or anything.
No, I know, like, I know you're not, but
I just think it was the games were just a little boring. I mean, outside of, like, the Scarab sets, Leviathans just stomped everyone. Yeah. And when they're just stomps, it's, like, it's still hype because it's Worlds, but it's not, like, you can't touch the PK games. Like, and that's what we're coming off of, is that, like, miracle run. We got to see, like, SSG get reverse swept again, and, like, that was just heartbreaking. And then this year, it was just... all the games were really close. Scarab's Dragons wasn't close. Us versus Leviathans wasn't close. Like, all the sets, like, weren't really close. They didn't, like satisfy people.
Okay, we cannot talk about this the whole podcast, because I will literally...
You still sound angry, bro. You gotta,
I am still mad about it.
Admit this anger,
I am mad about it, because I love the product that we put out, and I wanted it to be good, and, like... We see it in...
It's not your fault Leviathans were just way better than everyone.
That's... I know, but it would... But if... How often do we talk about, you know, balance changes in Smite or in other games or decisions in games that are made because the public thinks they want something that won't actually be good, but because it gains... You know, these ideas gain momentum. And when they gain enough momentum... They get instituted because that's what everyone wants, but it's worse. And I'm just like, I feel like it's so clear to me. Like you mentioned, SSG getting reverse swept again. That was in quarterfinals last year. That reverse sweep wouldn't have been so impactful if there was a loser's bracket. That's why that reverse sweep, we make it, that's why it matters. That's why we care. That's what makes it good.
I mean, I do think those hype sets can still happen in loser bracket runs. And I...
Right,
like, but I think loser bracket runs are still extremely hype. Like,
of course they are. But there's no difference between a great run from PK last year in a single Elim tournament to them. I mean, if you go based on, like I'm telling you, last year's Worlds, PK makes this unbelievable run. Mm-hmm. They lose 9 out of 10 times in those finals to Ghost, in my opinion. Maybe I'm wrong. But that's the way I saw it.
I think you're wrong a little bit, but yeah.
They lost every early game by, like, a ton. You know what I mean? They lost every early game by a ton and had to do really, really impressive stuff to get back. To make them do that 6 times in order to, you know, if they have to win one best of 5, then another, or, you know, eliminating a game from that, or, you know, whatever you want to choose for the winner's side, it likely doesn't happen. So I feel like, you know, the argument for double Elim is in the interest of the best players, because the best team is more likely to win in double Elim. But in my opinion, I don't want the best team to win every year. I want the best team that day to win. And that seems way more exciting to me than just guaranteeing it that way.
I still see double Elim as the best team winning that day once... Like, you already lose. Like, if it's on the finals day, it's still the best team winning, in my opinion.
Sure. And look, PK could make a run like that with a loser's bracket, or any team can make a run like that in loser's bracket. It's not like the best team is always going to win, but I think it does increase the odds of the best team winning and decreases the odds of an underdog winning. You know, like, when we're doing our pre-world show and we're talking, Scarabs are coming in, but we know that they've got an uphill battle. Scarabs in a double Elim format, we're like, what's the point? You know what I mean? Like, they have to do so much more in order to beat these teams. They have to beat a team that we can perceive as better than them twice in order to actually advance to a meaningful position. Whereas in this position, it's like, yeah, you know, if they just play well, then it could happen.
I'm pretty sure, like, this year, Scarabs could have beaten Dragons twice easily.
Yeah, this year they could have for sure.
Based off of, like, how we were scrimming them and everything, I think Scarabs were easily, like, an extremely good team at this Worlds compared to the rest of their season. Like, they literally just got better and better and better as the year went on. But yeah, season 9.
Bera's transitioning me, which is good work. Because Lord knows.
I'm just trying to get the anger out of your voice, man. You were heated for 15 minutes, man. That's not good for your blood pressure, man. We're getting
old. Season brain. I'm just angry all the time. All right, let's talk.
All these kids off your lawn.
I want to get them off my lawn. They're all dumb and want double Elim, bro. Get them out of my lawn. It's snowy on my lawn right now, so they can slip and fall on their way out. We're just gonna, I don't know, I assume that this is probably gonna be like multiple shows of season 9.
Yeah, it should be. I just want to be here for like 3 hours.
No, I don't. In fact, we have to, we're cutting it. I sure don't. We have to really cut it at like 9, because like I said, I'm missing a Steelers game right now. We're gonna lose anyways, but I want to watch us lose in full pain.
Okay.
So
44 minutes we got.
We got 44 minutes to go. Oh wait, I've got let you guys know about our sponsor for this episode. Oh boy, I lost the read. Here we go. This episode of the Backliners is brought to you by Axie Infinity. Play-to-earn games are games that allow you to earn crypto in-game, and Axie Infinity is the most popular play-to-earn crypto game in the world. Go to go.okex.com/Axie or the link in chat to find out how you can start earning crypto today. Okay, so we're just starting from Conquest in Season 9 patch notes, and we're talking about the Obelisk. Now, both of us have had the opportunity to play some PTS, me some dev play tests and that kind of stuff, so these are early reactions, I'd say, to what we're seeing in Season 9. I know Obelisk's had a couple problems with, like, you know, going through and operating properly, but in general, what's your reaction to the Obelisk?
I still haven't gotten a great grasp of it. Sometimes it feels like a chore to go do it, but I think in a more competitive scenario, when people get used to it, I think it will be impactful. But I was just playing, like, a lot of viewer games. I wasn't doing, like, in-houses with other, like, top-ranked players or anything.
Mm-hmm.
But it definitely felt really bad when we were, like, 90% of the way to get our obelisk finished, and then someone just came and stole all of it, and they instantly filled theirs up.
Yes.
Yeah, is it supposed to be doing damage, or is that just patched out, or what?
You are supposed to take damage for stealing,
for stealing it,
and you aren't supposed to be able to get them as quickly as you were.
Okay, gotcha. That makes it way better, then, because it was kind of hard to balance, I think, sometimes, of, like, trying to control. It was kind of like, it felt like I wasn't playing Smite, which was probably, like, a good thing. It felt like I was playing, like, a different game mode, almost, which was kind of exciting to kind of control the map. The more I played it, the more I got more used to, like, figuring out which camps I wanted to go to, figuring out, like, which wards I wanted to place, depending on which camps were spawning. Yeah, it felt pretty impactful. I do miss, like, Draugr. I think Draugr was a really good idea.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't watch the actual patch notes, so I don't know if they, like, gave a reason for getting Draugr out, but I did like that a lot. Also, I was a little confused as to, like, the double forp now, for, like, controlling the entire map for buffing those buffs.
Mm. Yes. I don't remember what the dev commentary was on that, but
okay. Yeah, I didn't watch it, unfortunately. I just kind of, like, played.
When you say the Draugr, do you mean you miss the, like, the buff Draugr gave you? Because there is still a camp there.
Oh, is that buff, or does that camp give you the Draugr buff?
No, it's just golden experience.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, you missed the buff.
Yeah, I missed the actual buff, because I felt like that added a little bit of extra strategy in the late game for, like, controlling certain parts. So, like, even if you were, like, already losing a teamfight, obviously you could just go get Draugr, and I liked that. And also, I like just the base defense aspect of it. I want to say, like, that stuff's exciting. I'm drafting that style, and then also controlling Draugr late game. Yeah, I just thought that was a cool design aspect.
Fair enough. Yeah, the new Nagas and that kind of stuff, the scepter, that's kind of tied to the obelisk. I think that as that gets more in tune, you know, on release, it should be operating as expected. So we can kind of talk a little bit more about that. Really quickly, some general bigger objective scaling changes. Fire Giant and Pyromancer and Gold Fury all get a little bit more power scaling. It actually doubles their power scaling from 2 to 4, so makes them a little bit harder as the game goes on. I feel like maybe it was meta being a lot of, like, double hunter and that kind of stuff, but I did feel like that those objectives were going down a little bit too easily, so I kind of like that change. Mm-hmm. And it's not make them tankier, it's making them more threatening, which I think is more fun than just, like,
making
sponges.
It was a little too easy to solo objectives, I think, with Death's Embrace and, like, that build that was going around. I guess the old, like, Crusher Aussie Death's Embrace build. You could literally just solo fire whenever you wanted. You could either get, like, a little bit of help, or you could just, if you were ahead, you could literally just solo it. So I agree.
Yep. All right. So on to relics now. This is probably going to take up, like, literally our whole podcast today. It's just talking about relics. in general, before we kind of dive a little bit deeper, thoughts on this direction for
Raw? Absolutely love it. Absolutely love it. I love being able to decide in the game if you want to upgrade your relics or upgrade your items or like level your items more. I think it adds a lot of diversity and a lot of different build paths that you can go. And it just kind of, just makes the game so much more unique each time. Besides like, okay, I'm just getting beads. Okay, I'm getting Aegis. Okay, once I finish my 6 items, I'm going to upgrade both of them. Now I feel like you have a much more, like, stronger reason to upgrade them early. And because you can get a lot of, like, offensiveness off of your relics now. And honestly, a lot of the relic ideas are really good. Some of them are a little scary.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think the upgrade shell was really scary. I think there's the Belt of Frenzy. I think one of those was pretty good. I'm glad the Blink rune already got nerfed, but yeah, some of them are a little scary for me.
We'll get to the specifics. But yeah, I agree. I think that this is a really fun and interesting way to add new effects to the game and add a little bit of complexity without making it too hard for the very casual Smite player to understand what is happening. Because you still get these for free.
Which is a very good idea still, by the
right.
way.
Yeah, whenever, you know, if you have a friend who only plays 3v3 Joust once every 6 months, they're going to be able to join up and still play and not be super punished. Obviously they'll be at a disadvantage, but anyone who plays a MOBA once every 6 months without getting updated is going to be at a disadvantage. That's like part of the draw of the genre, in my opinion. So overall, I think this is an awesome design direction, and there are some that I think a lot of people are really scared of that I like, but we'll get to those in a little bit. We'll start with Aegis. And if you are out of the loop, here's the deal. You still get your relic at 1 and at 12 for free. You could still upgrade it for 300 gold or 500 gold. Now it's 300 gold. It's the exact same as it was this year, basically just a cooldown decrease, how it's been for the last few years. But now each relic has 2 tier 3 upgrades that are another 500 gold on top of that. Are just really, they do some wild stuff. They're going to completely change the way the game is played. So the 2 Aegis options are Aegis of Acceleration and Aegis of Judgment. Aegis of Acceleration is using this item makes you invulnerable to damage and healing for 1.5 seconds and prevents you from taking any actions, typical for what Aegis is now. You can still move, of course. Each instance of damage prevented in this time provides you 7% movement speed for 4 seconds, stacking up to 3 times. I have not built Acceleration yet. Have you? I've been going Judgment.
I built Acceleration a lot, and it was kind of hard to judge the movement speed, because a lot of times I wasn't paying attention to my movement speed in those moments when I'm spamming Aegis and hoping it goes off.
Right.
But I think on immobile carries, where you're 100% going to get dove, you can kind of make the decision between Acceleration and Judgment, and in my opinion get value out of both of them, which again, like I said earlier, I like a lot. Just having the, because if it was only one path, I think that makes it very boring to get to the tier 3, but because you have 2 paths, I think that makes it so exciting. But I'm not sure which one is actually better.
I'll have to
do a lot of testing with these.
Acceleration. Okay, let me read Judgment, and then I'll kind of talk about my gut reaction to which is better in which situation. Aegis of Judgment, same thing, 1.5 seconds, can't take any actions, can still move, invulnerable to damage and healing. At the end of the duration, you explode, dealing 100 plus 50% of the prevented damage as magical damage in a 30-unit radius. The damage dealt by this effect is capped at 50% of your maximum health. So basically,
nerfed, by the way. The max health? I think it's like 30% or something.
Oh, now it's 30%. Okay, yeah, I'm reading the original patch notes, so very, very possible.
Player boot said it was 30% now.
All right, cool. So I think I really like Aegis of Judgment on gods like Jean-Cui, who are getting in there and have no intention of ever getting out, and are just about doing as much as they can with their life while they have it. Whereas on a god like, you know, Poseidon or Ra or something like that, that already gets some movement speed, getting acceleration to give you some more mobility, AMC, something like that. Acceleration on those types of gods that do want to survive the burst, makes a little bit of sense, to me.
So, or if for acceleration, if you're guaranteed going to get hit by a dot,
yeah,
I think acceleration goes up in value a lot on immobile characters.
Yep.
I don't think about the judgment.
4 seconds is good.
I think about the judgment on Zonkui. That's a pretty good idea you got there, aggro.
Sometimes the old noggin still works from time to time, you know? Sometimes.
Actually, a little scary, you know, thinking about it now.
Good. I want them to be scary. I want all these to be scary, to be honest. They're more fun that way.
And I assume the max health is with items as well. So if you have, like, E-Staff procs and all that stuff, it's going to be off of your total health currently, not, like, just your god, I guess, like base health.
It's maximum health, I believe. So it shouldn't have to worry about. I mean, E staff does just add it onto your pool. So if you have E staff proc'd them, then yeah, I think that would count.
Okay.
But no, like shields or anything like that.
Yeah.
Just
gotcha.
All right, Belt of Frenzy. The base version goes up from 10% to 15%, and duration increased from 5 to 6. That has carried over to the tier 2, but no longer the tier 2 no longer has a penetration buff, because that'll be a little bit later. Belt of the Berserker. Using this item grants all allied gods within 70 units 30% increased damage dealt to all targets, including objectives, and 50% attack speed increase, decaying every 0.5 seconds for 6 seconds. So you're going to be swinging with this one. I assume this does not get you over cap, because normally we say when things get you over cap, but we will see. And then Belt of Insatiable Hunger. Using this item grants all allied gods and 7 units 15% increased damage dealt to all targets, including objectives, and 25% attack speed increase for 10 seconds. If you earn a kill or assist on an enemy god while this buff is active, the duration refreshes. This can only occur once per use. So it has to kill a god. You can't refresh the duration on, like, by killing fire and then continuing to fight. But I think these two have very clear strengths.
Yep.
That, you know, it's not doesn't take a whole lot of analysis, I think. I mean, Belt of the Berserker is just, it does double the increased damage. 30% is an insane amount, but it's for a shorter duration. And once it's used, it's used. Whereas Belt of Insatiable Hunger for a longer team fight, something like that, is going to get a ton of value.
Is the decaying on the damage as well as the attack speed, or just the attack speed?
That is a good question.
Because I also wanted to get, like, the actual stats for the decay. For, like, is it just, like,
Flavorbird, like, says everything decays. And that sounds right based on how it's written.
So basically, the thing that supports have to think of is, are we trying to burst a god in these 6 seconds? Or are we trying to burst an objective in those 6 seconds? And if we're not trying to do that within that time frame, I would say, like, 3 seconds, honestly. Because then Insatiable Hunger becomes better, I think, at 3 seconds. So if you're not doing a lot of bursts in those 3 seconds, then Insatiable Hunger just looks way better.
Like, dude, you are going
to get much more value.
Yeah, but, like, let's say, like, I'm about to raw snipe someone, and my support pops Belt of the Berserker. Like, I'm going to legit one-tap them. Like, 30% increased damage is a lot. Like, I'm going to legitimately one-tap that person.
I think it would just take more communication, a little more synergy, or like just an Anubis walking to a fire giant and then just pressing 4.
Yeah, that's gonna actually one shot. That would be awesome. That'd be so fun.
Yeah, that sounds sick.
That's very cool. All right, Blink up next. The two upgrades are Corrupted Blink Rune. Using this item allows you to teleport 45 units away instantly, which is what it is now. This item cannot be used if you have taken or dealt damage in the last 3 seconds, same as now. On blinking, slow all enemies' movement speed and attack speed by 15% within a 25-unit radius for 2.5 seconds. So it's kind of like a horrific emblem on a blink. You want to talk about a sick initiation. This one's real, real good for that. And obviously the other one has been nerfed. The damage numbers on it that I'm about to read are wrong because, again, I'm reading the initial patch notes. But I will say that people, I think, have been sleeping on Corrupted Blink Rune. I think this is a really, really good upgrade for supports in particular.
Yeah, I've gotten that a lot. I was just going build to just screw over ADC, so I was going like the Corrupted Blink and the Shell and the Breastplate upgrade.
Yep.
And all of those combined, you can literally make an ADC not play the game. But yep. I do think Scorching Blink Rune probably overall has more value if you're able to get off those blinks. But I don't know as a frontliner how often you'll be able to get off those blinks. So if it's not often, Corrupted Blink's obviously way better. But if you can get off those blinks, like, can you imagine going against three frontliners that all have the Scorching Blink and they all just blink on you and you're just burning true damage?
Well, it's only behind them, right? Here, let me read it real quick.
Awesome.
It's whenever you blink, you basically leave an Agni 3 style trail of fire behind you that deals true damage. The numbers that are on here have been nerfed pretty significantly, and I don't know what they are off the top of my head.
I don't know what they are either.
But it was like one tapping people. It's no longer doing that. I think that like if they are just running at us and they like Scorching Blink on you, the fire trail shouldn't matter a whole lot, right? Because you're running away from them still, and it only goes over their blink area.
There was a time where I got, like, King Arthur ulted into a Scorching Blink, and I literally just got one shot. And I think that was after the nerf.
That's awesome.
So I think... Yeah, I love that, by the way. I think if you can position... I mean, obviously, like, if you're trying to blink max range DC someone, you still aren't going to get value off the Scorching.
Mm-hmm.
But I think with people positioning better... with the blinks that they will be playing for with Scorching Blink, I think they'll get a lot of value from it.
Yeah, very possible. Can I say as a quick aside that I truly do mean that's awesome that you just got one shot by like two abilities and one of them's a blink. But
thank you.
Just in the early stage, like there's no competitive play on this patch. It's a new season. And if you don't see, in my opinion, I want things to just be absolutely out of control wild, because that's more fun. Like, yeah, it's broken, but everyone can do it. It's fun, and it'll all get tuned to an appropriate level eventually. I don't, if we release a whole bunch of new stuff and everyone goes, yeah, but it all needs buffs, no one's gonna be excited. I think that having it release OP is good and correct. And I'm about it. Is Mike selling you on this banana invention, by the way?
Yeah, I'm pretty sold.
Okay, Mike and Sam were over at my house earlier this week, and we were watching Shark Tank. And this product was on Shark Tank. Basically, the way it works is you like put a banana in like a sleeve, basically. And then there's like a coring tool. You're going to cut off the end, and then you like decore the banana. You like pull the middle out of it, and then you can slide it onto a tube that is like filled with peanut butter or Nutella or whatever you want to stuff your banana with. And then you just like and then you pump it, and it fills the banana with Nutella or caramel or whatever you want in there.
That's a great idea, but I would spend $29 on it.
It's too expensive, number one. Can we make a Shark Tank 100% review podcast? I'm obsessed with watching Shark Tank, by the way. I hate capitalism. I really hate it, but I love Shark Tank. And this idea just stinks, dude. I hate it. Imagine this would be good once. And then you're going to have to clean it, and you're going to go, I regret all $30 I spent on this thing.
Yeah, I would spend $30 on it. I mean... I would much rather keep those $30 and just chop up the banana and then, like, dip the banana in whatever I wanted.
Bingo.
And spin. It's a great idea, but for $30, no way.
Yeah.
And I'm out.
And for those reasons, I'm out. Bracer of Radiance is the next one. Dude, every time you drink from that kombucha bottle, I think you're just sipping on a beer, and I'm kind of here for it, you know? I'm like, I should go get a beer, especially with the way this podcast started. I could use it.
Yeah, seriously.
Should we just have...
And then the Steelers lose?
Well, they're going to. So they're going to, for sure. That's all right. I don't care that much. Should we have an off-season podcast where we just drink during it?
Sure.
Cool.
Down. I'm extreme lightweight, so
that's perfect.
Yeah,
I actually am too. Okay. I don't know if prediction's cool with that, so I got to clear with them. But it sounds fun to me, so you know we'll find if it happens.
You know,
it doesn't.
We gave the idea to our audience, but we got to ask the boss first.
It's always better to ask for forgiveness than permission, Barrett. Come on, we're old enough to know that, and we've both been in committed relationships enough to know that. Bracer of Brilliance, place a radiant glow at a target location for 90 seconds. Allies who move through this glow gain 20% increased power and 20% increased movement speed for 8 seconds. It acts as a sentry ward. If destroyed, the cooldown of the relic is reduced by 20 seconds. So pretty similar to how it functions now, but definitely a bigger... I don't know what the numbers are now, but 20% seems much higher than what it is.
This just... Okay, maybe I'm an idiot, which is very possible, but this just seems better than Girdle? It lasts for 90 seconds and you can walk through it consistently, and it's a sentry ward, and if it gets destroyed you get 20 seconds off the cooldown.
It all seems good to me.
Yeah, this seems... I was testing this in my viewer games and it seemed very good for, like, you could literally just sprint your team out of situations by just throwing it at them.
Yeah, I think this also seems very good, but I was also very high on initial Bracer teams. It did see good amount of play competitive.
Dude, same. I love Bracer. I mean, I think it's just, like, the 50-50-ness of it. Like, obviously, above or below a certain amount of HP.
Right.
But now you just get it both for free. I mean, not for free, because you have to spend gold on it. But you just get both, like, anyways.
Yeah.
So I think this relic is extremely strong. Maybe I'm an idiot, but that seems... 20% power and 20% movement speed for 8 seconds when it lasts for 90 seconds. And it's a sentry... I don't know.
All that seems pretty good to me.
I feel like I'm trying to sell this thing right now.
I know. It's like you're on Shark Tank for... Hey, Sharks, have you ever wanted to get Ward Vision on the Fire Giant, but also deal more damage to it if they don't have a sentry? Well, introducing the Bracer of Brilliance. Mr. Wonderful's like, how many sales? And we're like, we're actually pre-revenue. It's only been on PTS. And he's like, take it behind the barn and shoot it. I watch a lot of Shark Tank. Bracer of Illumination. Allies who move through this glow gain 10% power if above half health, or 15% movement speed if below half health for 8 seconds. Mm-hmm. On use, a light sprite appears, patrolling back and forth, revealing enemies along the way. I didn't play with or against this. I guess it all depends on this sprite. And how good that is.
That thing has to move a lot.
Yeah.
And cover a lot of distance and move really fast, in my opinion. Because this has the same, like, problem as before, where if it's below half health, so it makes you not want to get it. Whereas the other one is just, you get it automatically. And then you can get value off the light sprite, and then also you can't get value off of it depending on which pathway it's patrolling. So I don't know if you can set the pathway when you put it down. I assume not. So it just seems worse, honestly. But yeah. I mean, we'll see. I just don't know anything about the light sprite. I probably should have done some testing, but I didn't, so sorry.
I'm all about that. Cloak of Aesthetic. This is the new I think that's not how you pronounce that word, but I'm doing it because it's my podcast. Get
it
over it.
Looks right to me.
This is one of the meditation upgrades. Using this item causes you to enter a meditative state where nearby allied gods within 35 units restore 40 plus 7% of their missing health and mana each tick. Heals occur once every 4 seconds. Each pulse reduces cooldowns of all abilities by 1.5 seconds. So basically just a juiced up version of current meditation. Cloak of the Avatar. Using this item causes you to enter a meditative state where nearby allied gods within 35 units restore 12 plus 6% of their missing health and mana each tick. Once every 4 seconds, you get a tick. You also gain a protective barrier of wind that explodes if an enemy comes within 15 units, knocking them back. I also have not playtested against this one yet. Have you?
I used it, but I didn't realize, is that for everyone that you tag it with, or is that just for the user? I guess it says you also gain.
It says you also gain, which makes me think it is only user, but I am not sure.
Okay. I did test this, and it was really fun to just knock away frontliners that were currently diving you.
Yeah.
I don't know if I would ever realistically buy this in a competitive situation, because I feel like sometimes the value isn't there over, like, the eggs that we covered earlier.
Right.
But it'll definitely be fun to just troll around with. Yeah. Or, like, if you need a knock-up in your team comp, I think it's funny. Yeah, I'm not sure if it will see a lot of value, but I think it's got to be, like, at least pretty good. I mean, that sounds really obvious, but I feel like it's got to be at least, you can get some value of it.
Yeah, gods like Sylvanas and those that really can't handle, like, when they get meleeed on, this seems really good on for sure. Okay, some Ankh upgrades. Blighted Ankh. Using this item reduces the healing received by all enemy gods within 55 units by 60% for 10 seconds and removes 75% of any currently applied shield. Enemies that are healed by god abilities while affected by this curse take 20% more damage from all sources for the duration of the curse. All healing reduced by this effect is instead distributed to your allies in a 40-unit radius around you. This seems good to me.
I completely agree.
Yeah, this seems actually that insane.
We'll cover the other one first.
Yeah, fair
cover
enough.
Drowned Ankh.
Drowned Ankh. Dude, it's going to be so hard having to memorize all of these names for all the Ankh. I can't just say Ankh anymore. I got to say Blighted Ankh or Drowned Ankh. Studying to do.
Those aren't attractive names to say either, really quickly.
Well, I mean, I don't want to be blighted or drowned, so I guess you're right with that. All right, Drown Ankh, using this item, reduces the healing received by all enemy gods within 55 units by 40% for 10 seconds and removes 75% of any currently applied shield. Enemies that are healed by god abilities while affected by this curse cause a pool of miasma to form beneath them that persists for 6 seconds. The miasma deals 2% of the enemy's current health every 0.5 seconds while enemies are inside it, and refreshes the Ankh debuff effect. So this is now an Ankh that deals damage outright.
Yep.
Whenever you apply it to them and they try and heal. Both Ankhs are so good, I don't know which one I like more up against, like, Hell and Sylvanas and Ardeo and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I think it'll just depend on the god. But I don't know, both of them are really good, but Blighted seems slightly better, depending on how big the pool of miasma is.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, does it say the size? I don't think it does.
It does not.
I've tried the Drowned Ankh a few times against, like, healing comps, and I think sometimes you get a lot of value off of it, but I think Blighted is just kind of strictly better.
I don't know.
It's, like, if they're obviously, like, in a corridor and they're healing in the corridor and people are just dying while walking through there, I think the Drowned Ankh is really sick. But Blighted just seems like the better option. I'm not sure. Because, like, it just depends on which direction the team fight's going in. Like, if they're just charging at you, then I feel like the Drowned Ankh isn't going to get much value because they're just walking, like, over the pools quickly.
Right.
So Blighted, I don't know. It's...
Yeah, but imagine, like, you've got Kabrakan, you, like, lock them in or tremble them, and then they're on the pool and they're taking damage.
Yeah.
Like, that sounds awesome.
That is true. That is true. We'll see. I did check, and it was doing a lot of damage when I did go it, so
yeah.
I think it's just situationally dependent, obviously.
Yeah. Makes sense to me. Entangling Wings. These are the the Heavenly Wings upgrades. Entangling Wings. Using this item increases the movement speed of all allied gods within 55 units by 20% for 5 seconds. It makes you immune to slows. On use, this relic also roots enemies around you for 1 second.
Yep, that's going to be good. There's no way that can't be good.
I also think it's going to be really good. And
I think
no I'm okay cap with it.
That might be one of the best relics.
I think like, it is one of the best relics. I think it's one of the best relics. And you know what? I think it's cool. I do. I'm going to say it. It is obviously insanely good.
Yep.
But, you know, you look at it, for years, our players have been saying, you know, look at what Dota does. Look at what League of Legends does with the way that they can use their items. And we can't have item effects that require button presses because of how popular the game is on controllers. And by the way, that is an advantage, not a disadvantage, because that's like why we're here. And this is a really good way to add these types of effects that on those yep. games would be on items. In our games, it can be on a relic like this. And I think it is cool. I am not concerned. I've seen a lot of people complain about it. I don't want them to complain about it. I think they should just like it because I like it. But obviously that's not going to happen. But in short,
I think it's
cool.
Very good, but scary to play against. But I completely agree with your opinion and support your opinion because I think adding stuff like this is really exciting. And it also gives the game a lot of different things to buff and nerf. Like you already had like all the starters last year.
Yep.
That you had to constantly buff and nerf. And now we're throwing like 20 relics into the pool that we also have to balance. So good luck, design team. But I do think this is a very good idea. I think it's sometimes a little scary because you can just kind of get like raw dog, like Sylvanas sprint pulled. You can get like Ganesh ulted off of sprint.
Awesome.
Or you can just like be barely in range, get ruined, and then die because of it.
Yep.
And those situations don't sound fun as a carry, but they do sound fun for the game. So I think in that situation, I think these are very good design aspects.
Agreed. Hasten Wings is the other option. You get 20% movement speed in all allies and then 55 units. 20% movement speed for 4 seconds, immune to slows, and grants haste. So you don't have the basic attack penalty. For the duration, successful basic attacks increase the duration by 1 second up to an additional 4 seconds. So as long as you're hitting your autos, and you've got plenty of opportunities in 4 seconds, you will get this to an 8-second movement speed increase. Any chance of this coming back as the gas pedal for ADCs?
I see this getting nerfed. I'll be honest. I think straight up 8 seconds potentially of haste, which in a late game team fight, you are definitely going to get 8 seconds of haste every single time. I think that is a very, very, very good thing. I think this is probably... Yeah, I think this might just bring back the gas pedal. Like, if you're in that 1v1 where most of the time the enemy character or enemy god will survive your 1v1, you can literally just sprint them down the lane now.
Yeah.
Like, they can't get from you. Like, they can jump, you can jump, and then you just chase them down the lane. So it sounds fun. I think it will probably get nerfed. But I think it's a very exciting change and fun.
There you go. Horrific Emblem. We gotta speed up, by the way. We only have like 10 minutes left until 9 o'clock. One of the upgrades, Emblem of an Increasing Peril. Good lord. These are gonna be the hardest ones to remember. Using this item slows the movement speed of all enemy gods within 35 units by 30% for 5 seconds. Their attack speed is also reduced by 25% for the duration. Additionally, their damage dealt is reduced by 15%. If an enemy deals
That's a lot of numbers.
If an enemy deals 10% of an allied god's maximum health in this time, the debuff effects are increased by 10% each, stacking up to 3 times. This is the craziest. I think this is crazier than the blink rune, than like the true
damage initial
blink.
One.
Yeah, like
yeah.
This is nutso. Like this.
Yep.
Remember when Terra ult used to just be press 4 insta win your team fight because you just stat check them.
Yep.
This is like twice as good as that version of Terra ult.
I see this getting nerfed.
I don't
even want to entertain it that much because I see it getting nerfed basically 100%. Because you can potentially have a 60% movement speed decrease on you, which sounds a lot of fun, honestly. And a 55% attack speed reduction.
I will say it is hard to get all 3 stacks because each stack you get makes it harder to hit the next stack.
Yeah, they won't nerf it now. That's a good point.
Emblem of Trembling Terror. This item slows the movement speed of all enemy gods within 35 units by 30% for 5 seconds. Their attack speed is also reduced by 25% for the duration. Additionally, they lose 15% damage. If an enemy is dealt 30% damage of their maximum health during this duration, they are trembled for 1.5 seconds. This is also really good. It's just not as good as the other one.
Yep. Same page. I agree. I think the tremble is cute, but if you can potentially sack the other things 3 times, and yeah, that's got to be better. Like, especially because you're not always going to be hitting like a frontline character. Like, if you hit the assassin, that's a lot of max HP.
Yep.
Really quickly. So, yep. Yeah.
Fortifying Shell. Using this item applies a shield to themselves and allies within 35 units for 100 health plus 12 health per god level for 3 seconds. Additionally, all allies take 50% reduced damage from basic attacks for the duration. When the shield is broken or expires, allies gain a new buff, providing 20% damage mitigation and 20% movement speed for 3 seconds. Really good. It's like shell and sprint at the same time.
This is insane. Yeah, this is we did a lot of damage testing with this, and it's literally insane. I think I tweeted about it. It's like super easy to counterbuild ADCs right now.
Yep.
This shell destroys ADCs. You literally cannot play the game. If you go the breastplate upgrade and this shell upgrade, the ADC literally cannot do damage to you, which I don't love that design aspect from it, because I feel like you can literally just shut down one person on the enemy team super easily with these items. So that's not cool for like streaming and stuff, if people just literally just go shell in that breastplate upgrade. But this is a very, very, very strong relic. Like, one of the most like OP relics on the release, in my opinion.
Yep, agreed. Phantom Shell, basically the same thing. You still get the 50% reduced damage from basic attacks for the duration. You get a slightly bigger shield, but it also allows you to pass through players and player-made objects. So no more Phantom, it's now Phantom Shell.
Yep.
Purification Beads. The two options are Chaotic Beads. Using this item makes you CC immune for 2 seconds. Any CC affected is cleansed during this time, including on activation. Sends out a homing projectile to the enemy god who applied it, dealing 7% of their maximum health. Tanks buying beads are going to love these beads, I feel like.
Which this did get nerfed, right?
I do not know.
Because I want to say people were telling me it would literally one-shot a Hoombots, and then I bought it and it didn't one-shot a Hoombots, so it only like ticked twice, I think, on the bats before I died.
That's probably something that, you know, would get changed one way or another. Yeah, it can only trigger 2 times per usage per god.
Okay, yeah.
But that's still a lot of damage you could potentially be sending out. And then Temporal Beads is just the old school upgraded beads. Reduces active cooldowns by 3 seconds. Lets you make cool plays. Aggressive beads. Always a big fan of this effect. So excited to have it back for sure.
Completely agreed. I think aggressive beads literally made backliners able to do so many more things instead of just dying. Like, beads and aggressively is one of the most fun things in the game.
Yep. Welcome back to the Giannis ult. 2 beads 2 situation. That's
same with Hebo, bro.
Yep, that's what I'm going to be doing to people, and I can't wait. Thorns of Overgrowth. Using this item reflects 25% of all damage you take before mitigations for the next 5 seconds back to its owner as magical damage. If you are dealt 120 times your level damage while this effect is active, the effect will end early. While this is active, enemies can only lifesteal from you for 50% of their total lifesteal. Additionally, you gain 5% movement speed and attack speed for each enemy god within 20 units. And then the other thorns is using this item reflects 35% of all damage you take before mitigations for the next 2 seconds back to its owner as magical damage. They can only lifesteal from you for 75% of their total lifesteal. And each basic attack from enemy gods reduces the cooldown of this item by 0.5 seconds, and its cooldown is 80 seconds. Which one are you less looking forward to playing against, Barra?
I think Sapping Strength kind of sucks, because it's only for 2 seconds. I think that's really good against mages. Like, say a Cuckoo's obviously going to be ulting you, you're ready for it, you just slam dunk him and he's dead.
Right.
But against ADCs, if I see you buying that, 2 seconds is obviously way shorter than 5 seconds in a team fight scenario.
Yep.
So if I can just play around that for a little bit, obviously you can get it back way sooner, the auto attacks reducing the cooldown, but I think Overgrowth is just better.
Yep. Sundering Blast fires a bolt that travels 70 units, stopping on first god hit and splashing in a 20-unit radius, dealing 15% of their current health as true damage and reducing any active shields by 75%. Targets hit take 5% increased damage for 5 seconds, stacking 2 times because this relic has 2 charges. So you get an AoE Sunder, which is really dope. And then Sundering Siphon, fire a bolt that travels 50 units, so not as far, stopping on first god hit, reducing any active shields by 75%, and linking them to you. For the next 4 seconds, they are dealt 5% of their current health as true damage every second, and you receive half that amount as healing. Enemies can break the link if they move past 60 units from you. The relic has 2 charges. A second hit on the same target will just refresh the duration. I saw a lot of plays happening with Sundering Siphon, and it looked very cool. I think it's really sweet.
I think Sundering Siphon is better than Sundering Blast, yep. Unfortunately, but I had a lot of fun with Sundering Blast. Whenever people would group up, you get a ton of value from this when people group up.
Yep.
But unfortunately, I think Siphon is just statistically better.
Yep. But, you know, if you need Sunder against their comp and they've got a lot of mobility and you're playing God without a lot of mobility, they're pretty likely to break the link. And Sundering Blast, I think, is still really good in those scenarios.
Yep, agreed.
So certainly usable. All right, last relics. Teleports. Heroic teleport.
Oh, right,
item allows you to teleport to any allied structure or ward while rooted in place. This effect is not interrupted by damage, but is interrupted by hard crowd control. After teleporting, you gain slow immunity, 20% movement speed, and 40 protections for 10 seconds, and it is on a 130-second cooldown. Then there's persistent teleport. Using this item allows you to teleport to any allied structure or ward while rooted in place. This effect is not interrupted by damage, but it is interrupted by crowd control. Hard crowd control. Kills and assists on enemy gods reduce this cooldown by 10 seconds. Its cooldown is 90 seconds at base. Everyone is losing their mind over persistent teleport, saying it's really OP.
It is really OP. That might be the best relic ever released.
Really? You think it's that
good? Yep. It is that good. You can literally go relic dagger and gank on cooldown. You literally always have a teleport back to lane.
Yeah, I do think Relic Dagger probably needs looking at with how much stronger all these relics became.
Yep.
It just, in a vacuum, became much stronger.
Yep.
Relic Dagger out of the equation. Is this really that OP? Assuming you can't build Relic Dagger.
I don't know if it's that OP, but the stuff that I saw people doing in my viewer games is just disgusting. Like, you can... I was playing with Spinner, and then one of my viewers just came up with it. He literally spam ganked me as a Wheelix with this, and literally, it was like, I couldn't play the lane because he was always there. And I don't know if it will actually be good in a realistic scenario, like once people are used to it, but it is very strong in my opinion.
Yeah, I think...
I don't know without Relic Dagger, though, but I think it's literally insane.
I think that combination is clearly abusable. I think without Relic Dagger and you tack an extra, like, 20 seconds on this bad boy, I think it's fine.
Yep, agreed.
And I think it's cool. I'm excited to see. I hope Teleport comes back into the meta in some way. I think Teleport, for cool plays, is cool. Using it to enable weak laning phases, less cool. It's kind of where I'm at on that. All right, that does it. We obviously still have so much more to talk about with Season 9, glyph items, god changes, all that kind of stuff. So, you know, we've got a long off season ahead of us, so we've got plenty of time to cover that. We do have a random question of the week that I did think about, and by think about, I mean my lovely wife told me one to ask, which was really smart by her. Like we mentioned earlier, it is snowing in Georgia, and as a result, it's a little chilly. Well, no, it's a little chilly, and as a result, it is snowing. And she made a delicious soup that we're going to be eating over these next few days. OP.
Yep.
Talk to me about your favorite soups, Barrow. What do you got in that category?
So we've been trying this vegan chicken noodle soup, and it is delicious. Basically, Dusty makes it the exact same way, but without the chicken, obviously, with just the chicken broth. It's like no chicken broth paste, and it tastes just like chicken. It still has the satisfying, like, stomach feel, the heartwarming feel to it.
Mm-hmm.
But back when I ate a lot of meat. I love beef stew with like beef stew with just a ton of vegetables in it.
Yeah.
Was one of my favorite ones. And then all-time favorite is probably potato soup.
Yes, Barracuda. The correct
if it's
answer.
Really, if it's really creamy and it's got that really good consistency to it, and it's like cheesy, potatoey, and you got like all the add-ons to it.
Yeah.
I think that bacon is by far the best soup.
A little couple scallions on top, maybe some green onion, something like that. Potato soup is the goat soup. That's all there is to it. It's got everything. You can make it a million different ways, but it's always delicious. I want it nice and thick, you know, that, and that's what she made. It's like this thick, delicious potato soup. It gets better the longer you leave it in the fridge. It just like tastes better, which is really great. I'm
that's
like
very
legitimately
soup,
excited.
By the way.
What'd you say?
That's very important for soups.
Yes.
They need to get better the longer they're in the fridge.
Yep. 100%. Otherwise, it's not working for me. The one bad thing is that Publix was out of celery whenever we went to get stuff for it. Because, you know,
what?
Snow.
The snow's coming. We got to buy all
the
celery.
Everyone's going to buy all the celery. You're like, bro, who took all the freaking celery? We're pissed. So no celery in there. And we are missing it a little bit. But, you know, onions, carrots. It's all good. Dude, potato
it's
soup
like
is great.
Every bite of potato soup is different, but then also the same.
Yeah. Yeah, I know exactly
what
you mean.
Really yeah, okay,
no,
okay.
I'm getting you on that. I really am. I really am, dude. It's really good. My number two soup, broccoli cheddar soup. It's basically just like, is it even soup? Like, it's really just like a dip. That's the best way to eat broccoli cheddar soup. And kind of all soups. Like, bread bowls for soup, unbelievable. Dipping, like, bread into your soup, unbelievably OP. Needs a nerf, 100%. Way more OP than persistent teleport with Relic Dagger. And broccoli cheddar soup with, like, a baguette. Unbelievable. Uh-huh. Just so good. I feel like I could eat that every single day.
It is really good.
And I would definitely die, but it's got broccoli, so it has to be healthy for me. You know, that's
exactly the 9 pounds of cheese you put in there is counteracted by the small amount of broccoli.
It's got some green, you know, that's the way it works. You know, that's the way it works.
Got a little bit.
All right. Thanks everyone for watching. I'm sorry I yelled at you all at the beginning of the podcast, but you deserved it and I was right and I won't take it back.
It sounded like you needed that, honestly.
Yeah. I just always need to yell a little bit.
Yeah.
That's why my job choice makes a lot of sense, for me, I think. But yeah, we'll catch you next time here on the Backliners. Make sure you're checking out all our sponsors and prediction and all that kind of stuff. And we will see you next week here on the Backliners. Barry, you know what to do.
Bye.
Clean.
Oh my goodness. That was good. That was good.
So, you've got an idea for a business. The store of your dreams. There's just one thing to figure out. Everything. That's why Shopify's all-in-one commerce platform makes it easy to sell online, in person, and everywhere else. Sell on social media, source products with an app to get that first sale feeling. It's the only solution that gives you everything you need to sell everywhere you want. So when you're ready to bring your idea to life, power it up with Shopify.
Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/listen.